Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast. By the faithful, for the faithful. I'm Bruce McCurdy, and today I am doing the podcast on my own in the absence of David Staples, who's coaching in a minor hockey tournament in snowy central Alberta. So David will have missed that game, or he'll watch it later when he does the scoring chances. Oilers returned to action on Saturday afternoon after a 10-day layoff in a game that I predicted entirely wrong. In the game day post, I suggested that the rusty Oilers might get off to a slow start against the red-hot Flyers, but over the course of the afternoon, the fact that Philadelphia was playing an afternoon game that was their fourth in 6 days, they might start to run out of steam while the rested Oilers came on strong. Well, yeah, that didn't happen. In fact, basically the exact reverse happened as the Oilers dominated the first half of the game, took a 2-goal lead, and then were unable to hold on to that lead as they beat a steady parade to the penalty box. And those same players beat a steady parade back to the players' bench with a skate of shame because the penalty kill unit could not get the job done. This was a very frustrating game. In the end, the Oilers lost 5-4 in overtime to Philadelphia. And the fact that Philadelphia is among my personal least favorite teams for the last 40 years or whatever they've been around is just adds to the frustration. The Oilers have lost in that barn. A couple years ago, they lost 6-5 when they blew 2 2-goal leads, came away with no points. Last year, they lost 2-1 when they gave up the game winner in the last few minutes of regulation. This time, at least, they come away with the 1 point, so we'll have to say half a point is, or half a loaf is better than none. They did their level best to blow both points in the dying seconds of regulation, but fortunately, they were able to survive that fiasco and make it to overtime where they promptly lost. And so they do get the one point. So we're going to go to the usual two good things, two bad things, and two numbers. So the good things, I'm going to go with the first 30 minutes of this game was among the very best stretches of hockey that the Oilers have played all year. They came out with the three centers model, with each of McDavid, Draisaitl, Nugent Hopkins running their own lines. And they really had it going on there. They were dominating play. They were holding the possession in Philadelphia's end for shifts on end, absolutely dominating on the shot clock. It was 29-9 at the midway point of the game in favor of Edmonton, 29-9. And they had at that point a 3-1 lead, and they were basically out shooting Philly by that margin, 3-1 in shots. And it was a well-deserved lead that Edmonton had, but they just could not sustain that for the rest of the way. And they wound up giving in 30 shots in the second 30 minutes of the game, while mustering only 15-4. So in the end, it was wide open, 44-39 in shots. Anyway, the first half of the game, Edmonton was, what I liked was how hard they were going to the net with and without the puck. Not just taking the puck there, but the wingers driving the net without the puck, and arriving there arriving hard. There was a number of scrums in this game where the Oilers gave as good as they could take, both in front of the and around the Philly net and around the Edmonton net as well, where the team sort of stood up collectively in several post whistle situations. And that's I personally like to see that. I'm an old school hockey fan. I watched the sport for 56 years now, and that's always been some part of the game. It's been reprioritized, shall we say, but I still think that with a strong team, you'll see that from time to time. We saw some of that from the Oilers. One other good thing, well, this is regularly a good thing, but Connor McDavid, and especially in that first half of the game, but he was absolutely dominant all over the puck, and he won so many one-on-one battles and moves where it looked like the guy was in good position on him, and the next thing you knew, Connor was around him or beside him or somewhere different with the puck and able to make another play. He scored an absolutely brilliant goal on a great almost solo rush. He did get a little bit of help on the play, a decent chip out pass from Jujhar Khaira, and then a very nice little touch pass from Zach Cassian just outside the blue line, just to aid a puck along that Connor basically chipped to himself, and he was able to otherwise beat the entire Philadelphia team, including the goalie, with tremendous speed, skill, shot. That was a goal that was a true joy to watch. And he was generally dominant. A couple of defensive issues, including on the winning goal, unfortunately, where his man was the guy that wound up alone in front and putting it home. So you got to look at the entire picture, but do not take that as me blaming Connor McDavid for that loss, because that's not at all what I'm saying. I'm just saying it was a very, very strong game from him. Best he's looked to my eye in quite some time, and almost good enough. Okay, those are the good things, the bad things. Let's start with I know no one will have thought of this one. How about the penalty kill? The Oilers beat a steady path to the penalty box, and it's part of the problem. It's the five penalties that they took. But the fact they only were able to kill one penalty out of five is just beyond atrocious. They just were unable to hold off Philadelphia in their 29th ranked power play, which pounded in 7 minutes of power play time. Let's get this right. 7 minutes and 9 seconds of power play time, during which Philly fired 14 shots on net and four of them into the net. The Oilers were overwhelmed. Their defense were not boxing out in front of the net. The forwards weren't collapsing down in front of the net. And they had situations where two defensemen were taking one man while another guy on the open side was tucking it home. And it just it cost them the game. I mean, the Oilers won this game 5-on-5 play, 3-0. They didn't give up a single goal 5-on-5. But they allowed 4 on the penalty kill. And then, of course, the winner in overtime was in 3-on-3 play. So pretty tough to play basically 45 minutes of 5-on-5 play with the shutout and still will give up 5 goals on the night. But here come the Oilers. The second one, I have to single out Chris Russell in the third period. Now, Russell, I don't know what happened. Late in the second period, he got dinged up, and I never did go back and look exactly what happened, but he went down the tunnel with a minute or 2 minutes to go in the second period, and he was back out there for the third period, but man, did he struggle mightily the rest of the way, including being on the ice for all three of the Philly goals that brought them back from 4-2 to 4-3 to 4-4 to 4-5, and being at least partly responsible on those goals. Of course, two of them were on the penalty kill, but for instance, he was the one on the Travis Konechny goal that made it 4-3, where he and Darnell Nurse both took the same guy on one side of the net and left Konechny alone, and the pass came through and he tapped it home. Then there was a sequence after it was 4-4, and you're thinking, well, they got to get it to overtime. They got to protect and look after the 1 point and get it to overtime. And wouldn't you know, in the last 15 seconds of regulation time with both points still on the line, the Oilers had a complete defensive zone total breakdown involving basically all the players on the ice, but keyed by Russell's horrible turnover when he had Leon Draisaitl coming back in support, just sweeping in to pick up a loose puck, and Russell checked it away from Draisaitl into the corner. And from there, the play generated out in front, and Philadelphia had three wonderful chances to score, actually four wonderful chances to score, with Talbot making Cam Talbot making three huge saves in rapid succession, and the fourth shot went over the crossbar and into the stands to let him off the hook with 8 or 9 seconds to play. But how can you let that happen? You know what, the Oilers, like, I can think of three times this year, tied in the last 30 seconds. Like, this is the one time of the game you cannot make a mistake. And once against Dallas, they left Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin all alone in front of the net with like 2 seconds to go in a 0-0 tie. That was the worst example. Koskinen saved him that time. Then there was the one in Vancouver where Brandon Manning got walked for a breakaway by Jake Virtanen, I think it was, last few weeks ago. And Koskinen again came up with the save on Virtanen's breakaway. And then there was today with the onslaught of golden opportunities, high danger scoring chances in the final 15 seconds of play in a tie game. And it's just not acceptable. You just got to play smarter hockey than that. You can't get yourself into those situations. And if there was ever situations where it was the Oilers that were pouring on the pressure and having the great chance to win a tie game at the other end, well, I don't remember any of those, and maybe my memory's failing, but I sure seem to remember the times that the Oilers had me crap in my pants in the dying seconds of a tie game. Man, just brutal. Just brutal. Anyway, that was kicked off by a bad Russell turnover, and then in overtime, it was again, the Oilers were trying to make a line change. They fed Russell just inside their own blue line, and he just froze with the puck. And a Flyer guy basically overwhelmed him, took the puck off him, and the sequence of pain started from there and wound up in the back of the net a few seconds later. So Chris Russell, they're brought in to stabilize the defense, and many more nights than not, he does a large amount of that. But today, and certainly in the third period in overtime, was not one of those days. And I frankly wonder if he's going to be able to play tomorrow, if there was actually some nick that he tried to play through or what, but his game went due south in the third period, and it was costly. So that's I think that's two bad things. And now numbers. Okay, how about this for a hockey game where they count on a natural stat trick, which is a wonderful stat site. They count not just shot attempts and shots, but they also count scoring chances and grade A scoring chances. They actually call them high danger chances. They do it different from we do at the Call of Hockey, where we analyze the play visually. Natural stat trick just merely keeps track of where on the ice the shots are taken from and what types of shots they are, and if they're within a certain area, they're called high danger. So more often than not, we're in the same neighborhood as they are. Even as they count shots on goal and misses, we only count shots that are on goal or hit the post. Anyway, here's high danger scoring chances in all situations in this game by period. First period, Oilers 13, Philly 2. Second period, Oilers 5, Philly 1. Score is 3-2 at this point, by the way, after the second period. Third period, Oilers 1, Philly 13. And overtime, Oilers 0, Philly 1. And that's, of course, the one that wound up in the back of the net that decided this thing. So it was like the ice suddenly tilted halfway through the game. And it went from Edmonton dominating play to Philly largely dominating play. And them having a series, they got the last four power plays of the game. That was part of it. But the fact is that their power play was firing on all cylinders, and Edmonton's penalty kill, other than one glorious moment when Zach Cassian scored a very nice shorthanded goal that seemed to make the lead safe at 4-2, Oilers' penalty kill was just not able to kill, and they wound up killing themselves. The Oilers got killed by their failures on the PK in this one. My other bad thing, I have to single out one other player here, and this is Milan Lucic, promoted to the first line on the Oilers' new three centers model on a line with Connor McDavid and Ty Ratty. And Lucic actually did earn an assist early in the game when he made a soft but just barely accurate enough headman pass that Ty Ratty was able to control in his skates, take in on a breakaway and score. But Lucic's own stats, this is playing with McDavid, and this is playing 13 minutes on the game, 0 shots on net, 0 hits, 2 penalties. And that is a bad combination. If you're going to bring the physicality, well, how about hitting someone? Instead, it was a weak tripping penalty where, as Drew Remenda said in the broadcast, all Lucic had to do was take one step and squeeze the guy into the boards. Instead, he reached with the stick, took the guy down. The second penalty was a careless high-sticking penalty where he didn't control the stick and drilled the guy in the face with the stick. They had that was the one that resulted in the third Flyers goal. And the Oilers had a couple other careless penalties. Cassian took a similarly careless high-sticking penalty that led to the tying goal and ruined what was otherwise a pretty good afternoon for Cassian. But in Lucic's case, there just isn't enough positivity, nothing really that shows up on the stat sheet there in this game in terms of generating either physicality or offense. And on a day where taking bad penalties costs your team, well, you got to look at the big free agent winger who twice had to sit for 2 minutes in this one. So, two good things, two bad things, two stats. I think we worked our way through all of those things. Now we're on to two games in 2 days. Second game tomorrow against the Montreal Canadiens, who also lost in overtime this afternoon, but don't have any traveling to do in between times. The Oilers have to somehow find the game they brought for the first part of this one and either stay the hell out of the penalty box or figure out a way to survive 2 minutes, 4-5, neither of which they were able to accomplish on Saturday afternoon in a disappointing but at least 1-point loss against Philadelphia. Onwards and upwards. And in the meantime, thanks everyone for listening. In the meantime, in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.